That's one of my new favorite songs, actually. It was a great song. That song reminds me that Good Friday's coming. That's a Good Friday song. Friday at 7 o'clock. That song reminded me of that. How are your brackets, by the way?
Busted.
Yeah, they're all busted, aren't they?
As soon as Illinois left, lost it was the end of it for me.
I was sure rooting for Oral Roberts last night with all the guff they've been getting. They almost did it. Okay, what are you doing a week from today?
I'm getting up really early.
Me too.
We have four Easter Sunday services.
Count them, four.
Four of them. And one of them is going to be outside.
Yep.
So you guys have been coming here, and that's fine. But for people that haven't been able to come in the building yet, that's a perfect opportunity for them. But also...
Yeah, if you just love a sunrise service, that's what this is going to be. You can stay in your car. If the weather's beautiful, you can bring a folding chair.
It's supposed to be...
Is it supposed to be nice?
Yeah, like 60 degrees.
We got it.
Yeah.
Claim it. So 7 o'clock, sunrise, in your car or not, out there in that back lot.
But you should get out of your car to get a donut and some coffee.
Yes, but only for that service.
Yeah, just for that service. Yep. So if you want those things, you 11 o'clockers are going to have to get up really early.
Yeah, you are.
But I was telling Paul in the first service, when I was in high school, so my whole growing up, we only did one sunrise service. And it was when I was in high school. And it's the only Easter service I remember of all of my Easter. Because, you know, we go to Easter every year. I remembered a few of when I was younger because that's a different story. But I remember Easter service, going to the sunrise service and standing out and the pastor out there talking. And
it'll be really memorable. So if you can, I mean, we're not just promoting the 7 a.m., but we are. If you can, come to 7 a.m. If not, 8 o'clock is going to be awesome.
Or... come to 7 o'clock and then come again later.
You could do that.
They're really going to be two different services, actually. So
they are or not?
They are.
A little bit. My sermon will be a little bit different at 7. The worship will be a little bit different because you can do different things out there than in here. So come. Four services. The seating will be like this. We have no idea what to expect. I sort of have a feeling that this is going to be the coming out of COVID and all of that, and we're back. I don't know. Could be wrong. That's why we're doing four. So come to one of them or two, not three. If you come to three, you have to give three times. No, I'm just kidding. Anything else?
No, it's going to be, it's Resurrection Sunday.
It's going to be great. And it starts Friday at 7 o'clock. Okay. Hear the word of the Lord as we start. Rejoice greatly, daughter Zion. Shout in triumph, daughter Jerusalem. Look, your king is coming to you. He is righteous and victorious, humble, and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. Through Isaiah, the Lord would say, this is the one to whom I look, the one who is humble and contrite in spirit. Solomon in the prophets gives grace to the humble. The word of the Lord. Twice a month, I meet here early in the morning with business leaders from Trinity. And we read articles and look at scripture, all that have to do with our roles as leaders. We have good discussions and bantering back and forth on the stuff that we're learning and the stuff that we're experiencing, even as leaders. And on more than one occasion, we've talked about, or at least we've quoted, a fellow by the name of Jim Collins, who wrote a book called Good to Great. It's a really good book. It's a book where Collins spent 5 years studying 11 corporations and how those corporations made the transition from good to great. So it's a fascinating book. If you haven't read it, you might want to try. One of the things that Collins talks about, though, is that there, as he was studying and looking at these corporations and their leaders, he came across two character qualities shared by all of the CEOs of these good to great companies. Two character qualities that they all had. The first one was that they were driven. They were incredibly strong-willed in getting their company from good to great. They were driven people. Second character quality. You want to guess what it is? Humility. These companies, these leaders of these corporations that went from good to great, these leaders, he says, were self-effacing. They were modest. They were very quick to point to everyone else in the organization for the reasons that this company has become so great. They were humble. Here, listen to Collins' words. The good to great leaders never wanted to become larger than life heroes. They never aspired to be put on a pedestal or become unreachable icons. They were seemingly ordinary people, quietly producing extraordinary results. Collins describes how he interviewed employees from the various companies of these leaders. And as he was interviewing them, he said, and they continually would use words to describe the leaders of these corporations. They would continue to use words like quiet, humble, modest, reserved, shy, gracious, mild-mannered, self-effacing, understated. They did not believe their own clippings. I like that one. Humility. Humility. What does it look like? Why is God so big on humility? What is humility really all about? Today we're finishing just a brief 3-week series that we've been looking at. We called it Minimum Daily Requirements. We did this series asking the question, what are the kind of people that we ought to be as Christ followers? This series purposely followed the rhythm series, where we did 8 weeks of rhythms of spiritual disciplines to look at the vehicles, at the disciplines that God uses to change us from the inside out. And we studied these rhythms and we applied these rhythms. I hope you're still doing them. We applied them for the purpose to be changed from the inside out, not just to be personally changed, but so that we could be the kind of people that Christ would use to bless the city, to bless out there. And so as we are changing from the inside out to be the kind of people that Christ would use to bless, God require of people to bless the city. And so we used Micah's words as sort of our playbook, where Micah writes, mankind, he has told each of you what is good and what the Lord requires of you. And Micah zeroes right in on three qualities that were extremely lacking of God's people in that day. And if we're not careful, can be lacking in our day as well. What does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love faithfulness, and to walk humbly with your God. You see, the people in Micah's day were completely self-sufficient. They were walking in pride. They had no need for God whatsoever, and therefore they weren't loving and they weren't caring for one another at all. And finally, God had enough of his people. And so in Micah, the rest of Micah 6 that we didn't study, it's this metaphor of a court hearing that God has. He brings his people to trial. And they fail miserably, guilty as charged. And so in their worry, they figure, what do we have to do now? And so as they respond, they try to come up with a bunch of religious duties that maybe they can pay God back, or maybe some expensive sacrifices. It sort of reminds me of, you know, foxhole conversions, or what at CREW we used to call it in university, toilet bowl promises. Toilet bowl promises are the getting drunk as a fraternity brother and then throwing up and just making promises to God. I'll do this and I'll do that and I'll do all these religious things if you just help me feel better. Toilet bowl promises. Well, God doesn't want their toilet bowl promises or their fox den conversions. He doesn't want their sacrifices and their religious duties. In a sense, when you look at what he's saying, God is looking at his people and he says, I want your heart. I want you. And I want your lifestyle. I want you to act justly. I want you to love. That's how Micah summarizes our requirements. Those three things. So let me ask you, we've studied the first two, to act justly, justice, to do what's right, to stand up for the marginalized, to act in justice, what's fair, what's right, and to love faithfulness. We said it was to love chesed, to love loyal love, to love covenant love, to love. So one is standing for justice, and the other is loving. So let me ask you for a second, which one of those first two do you lean toward? Which one are you more like? Let me give you a picture that might help you. This is not science, so don't hold me to this, okay? So the first picture, to act justly. Are you like that one? If you're like that one, that's a German shepherd. That's the watchdog. That's the one that's going to protect the weak. That's the one that's going to stand for what's right. That's the one that's going to do the just thing, the correct thing. That's the watchdog. And he's going to bare his teeth if you cross the line. Are you the German shepherd? Come over here to love faithfulness. This one's the golden retriever. This one just loves loyalty. This one is loyal. This one is always there. This one that is comforting those that need comforted. This is the loyal one that, man, when you think of love, you think of the this one. Are you the shepherd? Are you the retriever? If you don't know, ask the person sitting next to you. They'll give you a clue of which one you are. I'm convinced we lean one way or the other. Now, I want you to know, all three of those are required. And it takes fulfilling the third requirement to be able to accomplish the other two rightly. Without the third requirement, the shepherd is the German shepherd, standing for justice in an angry, teeth-bearing way. Without the third one, the retriever is all love and all soft and all comfort without truth and without grace. You need the third one. And the third one is to walk humbly with your God. That's our calling for today. In order to do both of them well, we must latch on to that. I pulled that off and put it on the screen because I wanted you to see how stark that is. To walk humbly with your God. What in the world does that mean? Look at those words for a second. Take yourself out of Sunday morning just for a moment. Take yourself out of a spiritual mindset and just read those words for what those words are saying. To walk humbly, kind of goofy. How do you walk humbly with God? Really? That's just more jargon, right? Doesn't have meaning. Gotta pull back. Got to say, what does that mean? The scriptures love to use a couple of common things to our lives to help us, almost to build a bridge to help us understand spiritual life. One is eating. Food is really important to the scriptures. As an Italian, I love that. I mean, to think that lasagna can be godly. Just sit with that for a moment. But eating is a common phenomenon. It's a common metaphor of the scriptures. It's a metaphor of fellowship. It's a metaphor of nourishment. Yesterday was Passover. Did you know that? The meal is huge for Passover. And I work out at the Mandel Jewish Center in Beechwood. And I think they're backsliding. Because all past years, I will forget that it's Passover and I'll go to work out and I'll pull into the parking lot and there'll just be me and one other Gentile in his car and we can't figure out why the place is locked. This year, it was open. It's like, wow, they're backsliding. So anyway, Passover is all about eating. Last Supper is all about eating. So food is a common phenomenon, a common idea. So is walking. Walking is a common metaphor for spirituality. Think about this. The Lord walked in the garden with Adam and Eve. The Lord walked with Abraham. What does that mean? He's trying to get us to think. Think about walking. Think about the priority of walking. Think about the implications of when you walk with somebody. Think about the value of walking. If you're walking, you're walking with somebody. If you're walking with somebody, your walking is a really important part. I want you to think for a moment. Think about the most important walks of your life. Can you think of any? Sue and I just got back from Florida almost 2 weeks ago now. Man, we needed a break. We got a good break. I can't tell you how many really, really long walks we went on the beach, reconnecting, recommunicating, keeping up with each other, walking, walking. It is a symbol of communication, isn't it? It's a symbol of relationship. It's a symbol of fellowship. Walk. Can you remember a time when you walked? Years ago, we planted a church in Kent, Ohio, by Kent State University. One of my best friends, he's still a really good friend of mine. He is the head of the percussion department at Eastman School of Music in New York. At that time, he was the head of the percussion department at Kent State University. And we couldn't afford a worship pastor in those days, so we had a part-time, Mike was our music director, great musician. So he helped me think of how do we do worship at this new church. We went on vacation together as families, and he and I were walking along the beach in Fripp Island, South Carolina. We just got talking about work and stuff, and we started thinking, I can remember this like it was yesterday, we need to do something unique for Christmas, musically. And we came up with the idea, we ended up calling it Winter Song. Winter Song, we came up with this idea, purposely didn't even have Christmas in the title, where we would invite the whole community of Kent and beyond and the university. We would, and because Mike had connections, we would invite the best musicians from all over the place to come and play the holiday music, and we would host it. It would be right here. It would be Winter Song, and we would have the greatest music. No one could believe that this little church would have this kind of music, and they would hear the clearest, most beautiful Christmas message about Christ they've ever heard. Winter Song. We did that by walking. Can you remember your important walks in Rome? In communication, they're about fellowship. I remember walking with my grandmother in Rome, in her little village outside of Rome. When I went into the ministry, she was so excited. I went to seminary. She started sending me articles about the Pope. She was so proud that I was going to become a priest. Then I married Sue. Totally confused, the old Italian woman. Then we had a child, and she was totally upside down. So finally, we went to Rome and to see her. And my grandmother and I still remember that long walk along these hilly streets and the little village outside Rome. And I remember her saying to me, because I explained to her, I am going into ministry. I'm going into Christian ministry. It's just not Catholic. I'm so sad, she said. Oh. And you don't want to make an old Italian woman sad. I'm so sad. I said, what are you sad about? She said, because you don't believe in Jesus anymore. Yeah, I do. More than I ever have. I don't think she ever believed me. But I remember that walk. It was a reestablishing of our relationship, a reopening of our communication. Okay, take that to that. Did you think about your walk? Now, apply that to that. What are God's people required to do? To walk humbly with their God. What does it mean? I don't want to just throw out religious jargon this morning. What does it mean? I just scribbled a few things. In its simplest terms, I'm reading my writing now. In simplest terms, it means to have a real, authentic fellowship with God. A real, authentic fellowship with God. With your God, because the word humble. We're talking about God here. It has to be humble. Right? If I'm walking with the creator of the universe, with the transcendent personal being of all eternity, of that which is all holy and everything that I'm not. How can it not be humble? It's got to be humble. The opposite of that would just have it be an empty ritual or a religious experience or a religious duty. And in that way, it's not a walk at all. It's just some sort of practice. This is a walk. And if I'm going to walk with the God of eternity, I'm going to be humble. What does James write? Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord. Which means if I'm not humble, I'm not in the sight of the Lord. I'm not in his presence. Or I've just invented my own God. And so I just create my own God and I'm in his presence. I'm not humble at all because he's my creation. Easy to do, right? Sort of reminds me of the Wizard of Oz. Dorothy and her friends are walking to Oz and they have all this imagination. They're going to the wizard who's this great one of awe and they fear him and they're going to be so humble when they get to him. And then they finally get to him and it's that phony little man. No need to be humble around him. But if I'm truly walking with who God really is, I'm going to be humble. Back when I was at the chapel, when I was a staff pastor, so this would have been, what, the early 90s, Towers, we had a big staff. We would do a pickup basketball games. Great basketball. And so, I mean, we'd pick up sides and be a great game. And every now and then, one of us would get hot where you couldn't miss anything. Sort of like Oral Roberts yesterday, just for a wee bit, but not long enough. One of us would get hot and we'd go, oh, the title would be Mr. Greatness. Wow, yeah. Well, one day we're playing and all of a sudden, who walks into the gym? Mark Price and Craig Elo with their tennis shoes. Now, for those of you that don't know, those were two members of the Cleveland Cavaliers who happened to go to our church. And they decided they were going to play with us. Whoa. It was at that moment I realized, I don't even know how to dribble. Now, all of a sudden, we were in the presence of greatness. And my basketball prowess, nothing. Walk humbly with your God. An authentic, real walk, fellowship. With him. It's the only way it can be. John Calvin, you know the name, 16th century French reformer, wrote his classic, The Institutes. Read them someday. They're pretty good. Here's what he says. It is evident that man never attains to a true self-knowledge. You don't really know yourself. It is evident that man never attains to a true self-knowledge until he has previously contemplated the face of God. A person doesn't really know themselves until they've contemplated the real God for who he is. It is evident that man never attains to a true self-knowledge until he has previously contemplated the face of God. And comes down after such contemplation to look into himself. You don't truly know yourself and your pride or your ego and all of that until you've truly looked into the face of God. And then all of a sudden it's, whoa. And whether it's Isaiah and his woe is me moment or the Apostle Peter and his woe is me moment, when someone truly has an authentic reality, vision of who God is. Humility has got to be the only response. To walk humbly with our God, as simple as I can make it, is to be the real me in the presence of the real God. That's as clear as I can make it. It speaks of fellowship, walking with him, but it speaks of a fellowship. And he loves you. James writes, humble yourself in the sight of the Lord. And what's the next phrase? And he will lift you up. Walk humbly with your God. You know the picture I get? It's the picture all of us see. It's the picture of a really tall parent, mother or father, with their itty-bitty child, and they're walking with them. And sometimes when the parent is not conscientious, they're walking too fast and the poor kid's being dragged. But to the conscientious parent, it's this. And the gait is their gait. The pace is their pace. And the arm is down here. And by grace, that's how God walks with us. By our gait, by our pace, he comes down to our level. Humble yourself and walk humbly with God. Humility. What does it look like? Humility. What was that character quality that Good to Great described? Humility. What does God require of his people? To act justly, to love love, and to walk humbly with our God. As we describe those attributes all the way through, we describe them as attributes that God had. So, what's my requirement? My requirement is to act justly. Got it. God establishes a standard of rightness, a standard of goodness, a concern for the weak and the marginalized, and calls us to like God is just. Act justly. Love faithfully. Love loyally. Love love. Got it. God loves his own with a covenant love in Christ, with compassion and faithfulness all of their lives, and then calls us to love others in that manner. What does love look like? God is love. What are we required to do? Love, love. Walk humbly. God. Oh, wait a minute. Let's think about that a minute. Is God humble? Is the sovereign, transcendent God of the universe, the glorious God of eternity, humble? It almost seems like an oxymoron, doesn't it? But get this. This is the very core of Christianity. If you don't get this, you don't get the Christian faith. Think about Jesus. You could think about where he was born. You could think about the fact that the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. You could think about the fact that he was always an outsider, that he washed his disciples' feet. The Apostle Paul, the theologian of the church, in Colossians chapter 1, would describe Christ as the invisible image, the visible image of the invisible God. Is God humble? Well, tell me about Christ. That same Paul would write a hymn and tell the believers of Thessalonica how they ought to be humble. And he would say this, have the same asked before Bethlehem, Jesus, who existing in the form of God, that's Christ, before Bethlehem, that's Christ, in the form of God's second person of the Trinity, the eternal glorious God, existing in the form of God, did not consider equality with God as something to be clung to grasped, exploited. Instead, Christmas time, he emptied himself by assuming the form of a servant, taking on the likeness of humanity. The God of all eternity becomes human, becomes a man at Christmas time. And when he came as a man, he humbled himself. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even to death on the cross. He humbled himself. He humbled himself to the cross for us, for you and for me, that we might be reconciled to God, that we might have access to a holy God, that we might know forgiveness. He humbled himself that we might be able to walk hand in hand with the God of eternity. Christ humbled himself that we might have that relationship. Walk with him. Walk with him. In all of his humility, Christ died on the cross to take care of my pride. To take care of my pride. This morning, as you're hearing about pride and humility, and you're recognizing maybe that this walk that I'm describing isn't you, and that God maybe feels a mile away, and that pride is something really big for you, and so is ego. If that's you and you're hearing it, run to the cross. Humility paid for your pride. Humility is like, and shows you how to live. And it's not a loser. It's no mistake that good to great says the greatest leaders are humble. Why? Because the God of the universe is humble. That's the way we're supposed to live. And Christ leads the way. Christ, God in the flesh, shows us the humility of God, but also shows us how to walk humbly with God. His cross is that picture. My pride is its price. Remember that old hymn we used to sing? When I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss and pour contempt on all my pride. Pride's a big deal to God. It keeps me from him. And it's such a big deal that Christ paid for it on his cross. And I pour all my pride on his cross. And he gives me all the life and all the fellowship that I never deserved. Well, we would be remiss as I end on this Palm Sunday if we didn't at least look at that story as we probe the idea of humility and Christ's character. As we look at Christ's example on Palm Sunday, the next day when the large crowd, by the way, in that little area of Jerusalem, some scholars suggest that up to 2 million extra people were there in the city because of the festival. When the large crowd had come to the festival, heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, they took their palm branches. You got yours. They took their palm branches and went out to meet him. And they kept shouting, Hosanna, meaning save us now. Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, the King of Israel. And Jesus found a young donkey and sat on it, just as it is written. Don't be afraid, daughter Zion. Look, your king is coming, sitting on a donkey's colt. How did he come? He came not on a steed or on a Roman chariot. He came on a smelly, lousy, humble little donkey. That's how he came. Christ is the Lord of humility. Now, there is precedent, by the way. At the coronation of Solomon, 1 Kings chapter 1, when David had his son Solomon coronated, he said, have Solomon come into Jerusalem and let him ride on the royal donkey. It's this precedent. In some ways, it was just fitting for the Jewish king in their humility to ride on the donkey. It's like other kings would ride in on their Mercedes limousine in Jerusalem, and the Jewish king, he'd ride in on a Ford Pinto or something. That's the humility. How did he come in? Humbly on a donkey. Why did he come into Jerusalem? Why? But so that on Friday he would die on the cross. Why did he come in? Not to conquer Rome, but to conquer my sin and my pride, and yours too. If you've embraced that, now you're called to live it out. And part of the requirements of living that out is that you act justly, that you love love, and that you walk humbly with your God. Many of you are going to go to work tomorrow. As you go to work, walk humbly with your God. After church today, some of you will go with friends or with family and have lunch somewhere. Walk humbly with your God. Tonight, as you're looking over your emails for work or other things and you're responding, walk humbly with your God. In whatever we do, in wherever we are, walk humbly with your God. That is our calling as followers of Jesus Christ. Would you pray with me, please? Father, I know that that's not natural for me, maybe for many of us here. I pray that there would be less of my ego and more of your spirit in my life. And I do pray for each of us as individuals, as parents, as kids, as workers, as teachers, as leaders, that by knowing and following the example of Christ, being actually in your real presence, a spirit of humility might be a part of our lives. And in so doing, fulfilling your will and even accomplishing your purposes. Lord, I do pray that we would be a people that act justly with justice, that we love faithfully with loyalty in your presence.